Before we get to today's program, we are going to take a quick detour and talk with a good friend that was on this show almost a year ago now. Wow. Anyhow, his name is Torbjörn Sassarsson, and for all you guys who have been following this program from the start and tuned into that show, know that Torbjörn is behind the website soultravel.se. And I've invited Torbjörn today to talk a little bit about an upcoming event for all you guys who are in the vicinity of Stockholm. Torbjörn is hosting a very interesting lecture. Myself and of course Torbjörn is going to be there. The lecture is with Lynn Buchanan, and it's about remote viewing and the Stargate project, among other things. But let Torbjörn speak more about this. He's got all the details. So hey Torbjörn, it's great to talk with you again. Tell us about the event, when and where, and so forth.
Lynn Buchanan from the Stargate project is coming here. It's his first time in Sweden, and he's one of the veterans, actually, real old remote viewing veteran from the beginning. So he knows all the guys that are spoken about on the net, like Joe McMonagle and so on.
Yeah, yeah.
And Mel Riley, he's very acquainted with Mel Riley and David Morales and so on.
Cool, and I know that Lynn was also in the movie that was made by Jim Mars, The Secret of Redgate, isn't that right?
Yeah, that's correct.
Yeah.
He was doing some remote viewing on extraterrestrials in that movie.
Yeah, sure. So so tell us about the event and what Lynn is going to talk about.
He's going to talk about, of course, the history of the Stargate project. He's going to talk about remote viewing in the Kuwait War. He was doing remote viewing on Saddam Hussein, and he was trying to penetrate the tomorrow's battle plan, actually, that they, Saddam was planning for. He's going to talk about police work and finding missing people and archaeology, remote viewing to find artifacts and so on.
Oh.
He will talk about remote viewing in business and for innovations.
Hmm.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
Also, medical remote viewing, which is a kind of new research field emerging in the United States right now.
Yeah. Well.
And he will mention remote viewing on extraterrestrials because, well, he hasn't missed that part due to all his experience.
Yeah, yeah.
And he will also talk about the future of psychic functioning. And of course, in the end, he will mention his own wisdom and insights from doing remote viewing for many years.
Sure. People can search for Lynn Buchanan, right? I have an interesting thread for people who want to know more about that.
Yeah, definitely. Wikipedia, the English version, international version, has a lot of stuff about him that are seem to be accurate.
Mm, interesting. Yeah. All you guys who are in vicinity of Stockholm or want to, you know, take yourselves to that place, tell us when this is and where and what it costs and so forth.
Sure. Everybody are of course welcome that have the opportunity to come here to Sweden. The event will take place on April the 3rd. The cost will be $36 US.
Mm.
For the event. It's going to be like three and a half hours.
Mm.
It's going to be in the central part of Stockholm. It's a place called the Temple Knights Order. It's a historical building and a historical place that is in itself interesting to see, I guess.
Yeah, exactly. Some interesting environment there too, absolutely. Very nice stuff, everybody. Check it out. It's soultravel.se.
They will find the information easily there.
Yeah, soultravel.se, and there's a button, I guess, on the right side of the page where you can see the name and of course image of Lynn Buchanan. So heads up on that. And Torbjörn, I guess we'll see each other there, right?
Yeah, we will meet there.
You'll do. Take care, man.
Thank you very much.
Thank
Take
you.
Care.
Who are we? Today with us on the line we have our good friend and monthly regular guest Alan Watt, and we will be cutting through the matrix with Alan for the next hour or so. And for all you guys out there who might be new to the program, tuning in for the first time, you should know that we have all our previous shows with Alan archived on our website. You should also, of course, head on over to Alan's website, cuttingthroughthematrix.com, and check out the material that he's got on there. DVDs, CDs, books, and vital information. Also, of course, follow along the audio blurbs that Alan put up on his site regularly. And if I remember correctly, last time we had Alan with us, we kind of left off getting into talking about Africa, and this is something I'd like to follow up on today with Alan, kind of taking it off, taking it where we left off last time we spoke. And you know, there's so much in regards to this, the suppression of the continent and so forth, and the historical background, and maybe we could get into that a little bit later. But first, of course, let's welcome back Alan to the program, and it's great to have you back again. You know, considering our latest experience and so forth with a website downtime and whatnot, I hope all things are well over at cuttingthroughthematrix.com.
Yeah, I think we upset some people, and they let you know through the most insidious ways.
Yeah. You know, I notice you have about what is it, 7 mirror sites or something up there now, so you won't go down that easily, eh?
That's right. To make it safer.
You know, also of course, let me say thank you again to you, Alan, for so prominently helping us, you know, getting the word out and so forth. At the beginning of this month when our site went down and so forth. So thank you very much for that one.
It's no problem at all.
Yeah, and as you know, as soon as something happens, you know, we're here to help you spread the word also. So hopefully, you know...
I think that will probably be the format in the future for people, is to help each other. I think more of this will probably happen depending on the topics you choose.
Yeah, absolutely, exactly, and then that's a very good idea, you know. Oh, got some nice trains in the background there.
That's the Canadian National going, taking its goods from China across Canada.
Oh my God, yeah. Through the how are things going, by the way, in regards to the?
Well, they're always, these trains go every day with their amazing long loads, incredible amount of carriages.
Uh-huh, okay.
And it's all made in China. Everything pretty well that's manufactured for anything is now made in China.
Yeah, amazing. The new industrial production country in the world, I guess.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. You know, who'd have thought that communism would have used the capitalist techniques to outdo capitalism?
It's amazing, isn't it? Seems like they're they're connected somehow, I guess.
Yeah, it gets confusing somewhere.
Yeah. Oh my God, it's incredible. Yeah, you know, getting I guess back to a little bit on the note that I wanted to begin on today. You know, in regards to Africa and so forth. I've always been, you know, curious to kind of you know, find out the reason behind you know, all the civil wars that is going on, that has been plaguing Africa for so long. And it seems to me, at least, that the continent has been, you know, consciously held back or not allowed, if you will, to develop industrially. The suppression is just incredible. So, I mean, what the heck do you think is going on down there? I'm reading about, you know, some background in regards to Cecil Rhodes and a little bit about what's his involvement in the diamond business down there back in the late 19th century, I guess, but. I don't know if we want to, you know, tie this even further back into ancient history or something. I don't know. What's your take on this? Why do you think is there a particular reason or agenda behind the suppression of the African continent?
You'll find that Africa has been exploited for thousands of years by the richer countries, even in ancient times. The Africa had always been a source for slavery, and the northern peoples in Africa had no problem going down there over the many, many centuries and bringing slaves up. The Egyptians had lots of Nubian slaves, they called them, and they even had regiments composed of them that fought for Egypt. They were a little better taken care of. So it had always been used as a source, and also a source of, even back in ancient times, for
for exotic goods, including ivory, for jewelry and so on,
yeah,
and various things. So it always has been seen as a resource. And in this system, which is really the same system today, it's still seen as a resource.
Hmm.
Africa sits on some of the world's most abundant forms of mineral deposits,
yeah,
all kinds of minerals, and various, and gold, of course, and silver and diamonds.
Hmm.
And when Britain started to take the lead with the British Empire, when it was made to be the leader with a new empire,
mm-hmm,
by the same moneyed elite, then they sent missionaries in initially into Africa. Missionaries were funded. You'll find like Livingstone, who was one of the most well-known ones,
mm-hmm,
to do deep exploration of the inner continent. And he was funded by the Royal Society of England. That was an openly Freemasonic scientific organization,
mm-hmm,
attached to the Royal Academy. And they funded him with the stipulation that he would observe for certain materials, types of woods, anything that could be of interest to merchants,
hmm,
while in there. So they've been using missionaries for a long time for probe missions.
Huh.
And eventually they knew what was where. In fact, many of these missionaries were actually trained in prospecting, just coincidentally. So there were prospectors too. They could identify minerals, gold, silver, etc. And certain strata in the way that the land will lay.
Yeah.
So you'll find eventually Britain drummed up as part of the empire production a sort of a new cause, which would be to push the British system as a good thing upon the rest of the world, especially Africa.
Mm-hmm.
And they put massive funding into setting up places in Africa to exploit it. They had trouble, again, because there were pretty large tribes there in some places which didn't like it too much.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So they brought the British military in. The taxpayers of Britain funded their wars in Africa, as always.
Hmm.
The taxpayers funded the laying of railway lines for the military, and, of course, the merchandising that would go on. They took all the resources out of it, and then they privatized it. This is a standard procedure down through history. Eventually, a society was set up in Oxford University, authorized by the British Crown, to specifically send specific people out to Africa to grab all resources, especially diamonds, gold, and silver.
Yeah.
And they created a special department within Oxford University for it that picked certain individuals, trained them, like Cecil Rhodes.
Wow.
And he did go out there initially to join his brother, who was already there, looking for diamonds.
Mm-hmm.
And eventually they merged with the De Beer Company, and then they formed a secret society back in Oxford that was to train future generations to take over from them. And to, not only to go over for the resources of Africa, but the natural resources of every country on the planet.
Hmm.
That was its function. For a new world order that was to come up in the future.
Yeah.
And certainly that's what they did. Africa was one of their main targets. They exploited it. They had to get the wealth. They had to build up their foundations, because you'll find the governments and the great foundations, as they're called, so-called charitable foundations, are really part and parcel of the same organization. The big foundations like Rockefeller, Carnegie,
yeah,
the Rhodes Trust, and many others, even this various Rothschild trusts as well, under different names, they fund all political movements in the world, in every country.
Yeah.
They fund all opposing political groups in the countries, and they also fund the cultural changes and pay those who will spearhead cultural changes and ensure that they'll have all the promotion in the media that they need. So we are living in a fixed system.
Yeah.
Which is planned by people who see themselves as a natural elite And you can trace the rise of them, really, although they were there before, but you can trace the rise of them back from the French Revolution, when it was over and done with. The writers who'd written all the propaganda for the revolution for years and years beforehand formed a Masonic society called the Encyclopedists, and they decided what sort of education children would then have from then on. And they decided that all knowledge would be in their hands, and all that the people would ever know was the knowledge that they gave out. And that's still going on today. They run the national education associations across the planet.
Yeah. I mean, obviously, one thing that comes to mind is in regards to those people who wonder how this connects, you know, with the most, you know, current, you know, people ruling the planet, I guess, is, of course, the Rhodes Scholarship. And I guess that this was founded by Cecil Rhodes himself, right?
He was a front man. Rothschild backed him up. So did another family related to the Beers in Africa, who lived in Britain, called Beer as well, B-O-E-R. So they also were heavily involved in the setting up of the society. The Rothschilds basically funded most of it, but they also appointed political advisors to take over from Cecil Rhodes. And they even put one of their own men in charge of South Africa. So they ran all sides, even what appeared to be opposing sides.
Yeah.
They put their own men in charge.
And
Lord Milner, Alfred Milner, who ran a similar authorized organization for the British Crown, who had what they called the Round Table Group, merged with the Rhodes Society Group. And those two groups still, you'll see out today, they have the Round Table Society across the planet.
Yeah.
They recruit them from universities, bureaucracies, the great foundations. And all the bureaucracies of the great foundations are interlinked into one. They all communicate so that they're all on the same track at the same time.
Do you think that they have this kind of, you know, mythological view on themselves in regards to... you know, them using that name, the Round Table, of course, going back to, you know, King Arthur. Do you think that they have this kind of view of themselves?
Well, they do. They're incredibly arrogant. The upper ones, of course, are specially selected. They used extra selective breeding for their wives. They don't choose their wives, they're picked for them.
Sure, yeah.
They're aristocracy. From their own point of view, they are you call them hybrids, really, a hybrid race. and that's how they see themselves.
Yeah.
They're not stupid. They have intelligence and tremendous cunning. But they also have the power, financial power, in the banks. I mean, of them own the banks.
Yeah, sure.
And they run financial institutions, the largest in the world. We're all trained to work to earn their money, which we then get taxed back to governments which they appoint. So it is their system, you see.
Yeah, it is. Absolutely. You know, in regards to diamonds, going back to that, I can't remember it now. It was a documentary I saw a while back in regards to, of course, you know, the beers and all of this, but... stating that diamonds are you know, semi-precious, and that there actually are kind of, you know, warehouses full of diamonds, basically. But in order to kind of keep the values high on those that they have, they constantly, you know, try to keep them...
Suppress the market.
Yeah, exactly. Scarce, I guess. Like they aren't widely available. But, I mean... Do you think that this is the case, so to speak, that this is just like everything else, is a fraud, that there's diamonds all over the place, basically?
There are diamonds all over the place. It's more even intricate than that. You know, when you understand that even the gold standard, that the price of gold, for instance, has been set for the last 150 years by the Rothschilds.
Sure, sure.
From London.
Yeah.
And every morning the stock markets and everything sit and wait with a hushed breath for this king to come forward in his pajamas at his window and stick his finger out the window and tell the people what the price of gold is that day. Because that's how it's done.
It is,
it's
huh?
Just a, it's just whatever he wants it to be is what it will be.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's spoken into existence, and everybody goes to work on it.
Sure, sure.
So right away, here's the guys who own the gold mines all over the place, setting the price off the gold. Well, that's a good job. It's good work if you can get it. Yeah.
Oh,
so
my God.
This is the whole con game with everything. Same with diamonds.
Yeah.
Where I live, quite near me, there's a mining town.
Mm-hmm.
Sudbury is still a mining town today. It's best known for nickel, and although it has all other kinds of metals here, including gold, that come across once in a while.
Mm-hmm.
And I looked through an old book in the library, the town library, on old Sudbury of the 1800s.
Mm-hmm.
And the biggest building, it was called Rothschild Square. And the building on it was called the Rothschild House, big letters.
Oh.
It's not there anymore. So already they were into every major place in Canada where there was natural resources, and they owned it.
In regards to, as you said earlier, you know, the British military, I guess, was, for example, down in Africa, building and setting up all the rail lines and so forth, the trains down there. It almost feels like, you know, that they were down there, set up the system in place, and then kind of as quickly as they went in, basically left. But you're saying that the involvement is still there in regards to that they actually have privatized the industry, and now they can do what they want. They don't have to be down there and do any of the dirty work, I guess.
Well, they don't have to. I mean, they kept saying how they're going to bring freedom to the Africans and democracy.
Mm.
And the British way of life, you see.
Mm.
And so they took people who were basically free and tribal and then made them live half their life underground, working for this new thing called money, which they had to spend in town stores owned by the company that owned the mines. They took it all back from them. Everything is said under the guise of helping people.
Sure.
That's the most oldest trick in history.
Absolutely.
So they were exploited right away. I notice even now South Africa granted special privileges to De Beer Company. It's still there.
Hmm.
And they have very special privileges, actually a better deal under Mandela than they had before under South Africans.
Hmm. Well, that's interesting.
Well, payoffs work wonders, you know.
Yeah, sure. Huh.
Yeah.
Okay, so these are the, again, we're put in the official limelight, so to speak. We are handed these heroes also, I guess. That's what you're saying.
Oh, we are. You know, people forget that it's quite cheap. Logic is supposed to always be the same when you apply it to the same situations and same problems. If it's truly logic, it must always come out with the same answer.
Hmm.
Now, when people go and blow up buses in Israel, there's a scream of terrorism.
Mm-hmm.
And when towers are blown up in New York, it's the scream terrorism. Nelson Mandela, if you go through his records, was not put in prison because he was at the time a communist leader. He was put in prison because he blew up school buses of children.
Huh.
With hand grenades.
Hmm.
And now this man is a hero. How come he is a hero and other ones are not heroes?
Yeah. Huh. My God, it's a tremendous, you know, suppression that has been, you know, going on down in Africa, and with all, in regards to all the wars, all the corrupt leaders, and it feels like, you know, over and over again, they just, you know, a new guy is picked. He's as corrupt as the last one was, and they have revolutions on revolutions on revolutions, and nothing again takes place. And I mean, who's the, in that sense, who's the visible? Is there any hand behind this, a visible hand, you know, or you know, a name, I guess, we can kind of pinpoint point towards in regards to, I mean, who put these men in power, or is it simply the fact that these guys actually do a military overthrow there, but they are just, you know, handed the weapons and the bombs, basically, in order to
do them? They're given the weapons and the bombs. The ones who are behind this, there's only one global order that has been for a long time.
Yeah.
And as I say, it's composed of those who are the wealthy families that are the banking families of the World Bank. They are the World Bank.
Yeah.
They finance every country. They finance all the institutions. The big foundations are all not just interlinked with them, they're part of them. And they're also part of an inner religion, part of it based on eugenics and science. And they have, for a long time, they have used these techniques of exploiting countries. As I say, one of the best books, their movies to watch, was a Marlon Brando movie called Burn, where they actually show you very simply how a British agent, a provocateur, is sent in to a Caribbean island, and he uses everyone, the whites and the blacks, to overthrow the Portuguese who ran the country. The whites who lived there thought they would take it over. The blacks thought they would take it over. And of course, after they both got rid of the Portuguese, in comes the British.
Yeah.
But they show you how everyone is used. And that's been going up. That was a science that was taught to these agents in England.
Yeah.
For a few hundred years.
But, you know, now IMF is going to write off the debts to Africa and everything is going to be all right. Isn't that true?
Oh, I know. I know. It's just amazing. Supposedly, you see, since the 50s, or at least the 40s, late 40s, every country that signed the United Nations Agreement, the Charter, also agreed to set up what they call a bank of overseas economic development. And what you'll find in every country, certain politicians, who are generally the ones who do the left side of the things for government, they'll be liberal or even further left. They're the ones who get the jobs to take care of where the money goes to overseas corporations to help the poor countries. And what they do, of course, is simply funnel the money that goes to, say, Africa into their own corporations, the American corporations or British, that are set up in Africa. That's where it doesn't go to the people.
Yeah, it's the same story.
So this, again, is all part of it. These same people who were in politics and now work for the OECD, for the UN, sometimes leave the UN for a year or so, and they'll work in one of the big foundations. They go out round in a circle. Politics, foundations, United Nations.
Yeah.
And so everything is interlinked in the structure.
Yeah.
They don't have separate agendas. There's only one agenda.
Yeah. You know, one thing that seems to be kind of pushing now, the latest scheme in regards to the connection with Africa here is, I saw an excellent documentary the other day called The Great Global Warming Swindle, I think, and they addressed this issue a little bit in regards to why Africa hasn't, you know, been able to develop, you know, industrially and so forth. And it seems to be that the latest kind of drumbeat on this is in regards to the environment, you know, that there actually aren't been, you know, able to develop industrially because, you know, the fear of the environmental dangers and so forth. And you think that this could be, again, now there could be drumming this as another reason? I mean, they are given, of course, you know, again, crappy technology in regards to the solar powers and the environmentally safe techniques that I believe actually are out there, but we aren't, you know, we aren't given them. But this seems to be the reason now. Would you agree on that?
They will use every excuse possible to claim what's happening in Africa is all for various different circumstances.
Yeah.
But they don't get into any of the truth of the matter. In the 1700s, you had the father of John Stuart Mill, who also was a British political economist, His son was too. They both wrote books on the economies. And these guys were also in the same family lineage of Bertrand Russell, who took over in the late 1800s and lived into the 1970s, I think, following in his father's footsteps. So these characters were partly eugenicists. They believed in the eugenics theory that there'd be too many of the lower classes breeding, and they would overtake the their more elite cousins further north of them, you might say.
Yeah.
And so they'd have to start culling off all the different peoples. Well, John Stuart Mill wrote a list of the most likely people who should be allowed to and encouraged to survive. But Africa, he said, and this was reiterated in the writings of H.G. Wells and others who belong to the eugenicist societies, but they knew in the 1700s and the 1800s that Africa, they said that they cannot adopt to the white man's economic system. And those who would not adopt it would have to perish because they would be a burden on the societies that try to move forward. He says those who can emulate the white man, and he actually said mimic the white man, he said would be allowed to survive. And so long ago, and these guys all belong to the same foundations that are still running the world today.
Yeah. So
so no, they can make excuses and put all these sad TV shows on them how much they care. But the fact is, at the top, that's their mandate, is to vastly reduce the population of Africa. They've never, you see, you cannot take a culture from a people. And they knew this too. Darwin knew it as well. They all knew it, and all the social scientists knew it. It's the same with American Indians. You cannot take a culture away from a people where their whole historical background is so vastly different from yours. And because they cannot simply jump from a completely different way of perceiving things into your mindset, they can't do that. And when they can't do that, they either turn to drugs, alcohol, and so on, destructive behavior, or if they're lucky in some sense, lucky in one sense, that they have some land left where they can still try and keep their old customs going because their customs give them meaning of life. And this is basic sociology, they understand this. They've never tried to allow, in fact, they've done anything but allow the Africans to keep a natural system or culture going.
It's so strange to me, this idea or this philosophical concept of conformity, of you know, bringing the order, I guess, then out of the chaos as they see it. And I wonder what, you know, what type of mindset that drives these people who want to, you know, again, remove all the cultures and convert it into this, you know, one world government. It almost seems, you know, in that sense, alien to the human species.
Actually, you're close to it.
Yeah.
You're close to it in a sense, if we define what human is.
Yeah.
And what being having humanitarian thoughts are. Because what they know in higher sociology and psychology are that you have people who will lead in every generation. The problem is the ones that are picked are the ones who will conform to the existing leaders who are tyrants.
Yeah.
That's standard too.
Yeah.
However, those who have the higher intellects and who are picked to help lead society, even though they have higher intellects in some areas, there's a price for that, and that's empathy for others. That's also acknowledged in all the big university books.
Yeah.
So when you have people who've gone even further, and long before Darwin came out with his Origin of Species, Darwin's family, as I say, were already interbreeding. They were following their own belief before Darwin wrote the book.
Yeah.
Because the grandfather, his father, and Darwin himself only married wives from the Wedgwood family. And that wasn't just his family that were doing that. His own particular little class were doing that. because they already had their inner religion.
Yeah.
Eugenics is only part of it. It's an ancient religion. It's actually taken from Hinduism. Very old, old Hinduism.
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, in regards to Hinduism, this is a loaded word and all that again, but is there connection to the Aryans in regards to that this is a Hindu origin?
Yeah, they keep bringing up every so often in history that the Aryan thing, Hitler tried to revive it too. In fact, he sent teams over to India and Tibet as well.
Yeah.
Looking for the remnants of the old Aryan peoples.
Sure.
And Madame Blavatsky that was put out there to help start the female side of Freemasonry.
Mm-hmm.
They call them side degrees. Not real degrees, but side degrees.
Mm-hmm.
They put her out there. Well, her books were full of the same stuff on the Aryan people.
Mm-hmm.
And they were talking about the fifth Aryan race, meaning there were four before that, where society goes through massive changes.
Yeah.
The unfit are killed off, and those who are fit to come through breeding and everything else, will be allowed to come through. This is part of their philosophy.
And in some sense, it seems like they have that philosophy in that sense has manifested, because there have been, and is, I guess, I mean, there's no denying it, a ruling race in that sense, and that is the one who is currently in control, isn't that right?
I'd say absolutely.
Yeah.
I mean, I've seen the nicest people, as they talk to you, some of them who are well-known, tell you in the nicest possible way why the world must start killing off the useless eaters, and they really believe it.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, and again, that they're pushing this... overpopulation, as I see it, at least fraud, and trying to justify, and again making, creating the scientific, background. So we have again, professors and teachers and scientists going out there and saying that the only way to save the Earth basically is to get rid of all the humans. And this now very much, I think, connects with the environmental, hysteria that has been developing just in the last few months here. Would you agree on that?
It's even worse. In the 1800s, the mid-1800s, books came out from these institutions and foundations explaining all this, the need to cull off the useless ones as health, hygiene, food improved on the lesser classes. There would be too many of them, and the natural illnesses wouldn't be killing them off so fast. And then, of course, when they started to give out higher medicines, which actually worked for a change, they complained all the more. And so they said they'd have to retaliate and find ways to start sterilizing the people. That's been underway. It has been in process for before I was born, through inoculations, because that's when. And you'll find, since the Salk vaccine especially, what was given out, the sperm count in the Western male has dropped now 75% off 1950 levels.
Amazing.
And the United Nations itself announces the statistics for that every year.
Yeah, sure.
Without comment.
Oh my God.
And so, we are under the process of sterilization.
Sure, sure. Absolutely.
Africa, no doubt about it. We can go into the congressional records where, and it's all out there, I have the copies here, where they asked for money to be put into research in the 70s after Kissinger made his wide statement that the enemy to the state, the greatest threat to the state, was overpopulation.
Yeah.
And funding went into various agencies to find a way to bring it down quickly. And they had a requisition to create a disease which would literally destroy the entire immune system of a victim, so that some simple thing which wouldn't normally even bother you would kill you.
So with that, we are into the area of AIDS and HIV, I guess, right? Yeah.
So I listened to a group of black doctors in the States talking about this, And they knew. They came out openly, and they discussed this amongst themselves about the homosexual problem. It was rampant there. However, they had traced the first inoculations free given out by the World Health Organization, the Doctor Who of the United Nations. And they gave them out first in Haiti, free.
Yeah.
And now Haiti happened to be a paradise for homosexuals who went there for young boys. Hmm. That was well known at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And they could rent them for a few cents. However, the UN then went into Africa, and they tracked these injections right across Africa, and the AIDS broke out right behind them, everywhere they went.
Yeah. So, so this is, a conscious...
You see, this is the amazing thing in this world. If you or I were pulled into a jury in law, a court of law, even if you had a suspect, and all the evidence points to the suspect did this, well, that's how you base your decisions, you come to your conclusions, and that's how the verdict is you come to arrive at, is the preponderance of evidence. We have this all over the place, not only with 9/11, but also with the AIDS, etc. But we're not allowed to make an open legal conclusion. The hammer doesn't fall. Because it's the big boys themselves who are doing this.
Sure.
But the preponderance of evidence always points to where your conclusion must lay until you have more facts or opposing facts.
Yeah.
But we do know, for instance, and this did come out here in Canada on the CBC television nationwide. I don't know how it got into the newscast. Mr. Mansbridge, he's the bridge to man, you see. That's his job, is to give us the news every day, and he's called the most trusted man in Canada.
Oh, really? Oh,
yeah, they give him awards for being that, too.
Ah, fantastic.
And anyway, everybody's grown up with him.
Yeah.
And he'd never lie to you.
Yeah.
And he reads the dummy board very well. However, he was talking about a completely different subject, and the screen shifted to a woman interviewer just talking to two men at a map.
Mm-hmm.
Of Africa and India. And it was so bizarre because there was no intro to it or anything, and she was saying, what gave you the right to sterilize these women? Well, it turned out these two men worked for the World Health Organization. It had been found that they'd given out millions of free supposed tetanus shots to so many millions of women in India and Africa. And every one of them had massive infections of the ovaries, which sterilized them.
Yeah.
But these guys' attitude was it was typical of the bureaucracy of the United Nations, because these guys don't have to play politics. They know they're leading the world. They know what their real job is. And they were indignant and said, well, we have to do it. Someone has to take care of this.
Yeah. And I think that they actually believe this themselves. Otherwise, they wouldn't be there. It seems.
I have talked to one of these people personally.
Yeah.
It's a woman in Canada here, who comes from a very, very old family, a very wealthy internationalist connected family, and she also was a school teacher, but one of a strange kind, because she's allowed to go away 6 months to China here and South America here for another 6 months or a year. And she's pushing and observing all what's going on. And I met her outside a store. I said, how are you doing? And she says, oh, yeah. And she forgets she's talking to me because she thinks I'm one of them, I guess, is what I know. And she prattled on about how wonderful it was in China and all the rest of it. She says, I really have to put reports in because of the way, she says, they handle their overpopulation problem. See, China, under the United Nations, is to be the model state for the whole world. We have to emulate them. And the UN has declared that officially. And I says, and she's gone about how they do it and how they've created social approval and social disapproval, because now they don't have to bring the army regulars in to pull women out who are pregnant with a second child. They get the townspeople to shame them and pull them out themselves.
Yeah, yeah.
And so it's the Pavlovian technique that's taught against smokers, and everybody, you see smokers lighting up now in the street and they'll almost stone you to death. That's indoctrination and Pavlovian reaction. Well, it's the same with pregnant women. The neighbors will drag them off to the abortion clinic. And she thought this was wonderful, absolutely wonderful. She was ecstatic. And then, of course, I brought her back to who she was talking to. I says, what gives you the right to think you should do this? And she said the exact same thing. She was stunned for a second, and she says, well, somebody's got to do it.
Sure.
And that's what you hear from them all.
Exactly. So
they don't just talk about it, they're doing it.
Absolutely, and the conviction, again, of these things are beyond, I think, debate for these people, and they were certainly not listened to anyone that, you know, isn't within their own, you know, milieu, so to speak, that they actually are, you know, let's say a non-scientist or whatever, even if scientists themselves would come out and say that, you know, global warming is in that sense is a fraud, or overpopulation in that sense is a fraud, there, because their minds are made up at this point, and there's no, you know, there's no turning back, because the agenda, I think, is it is set, and they're going to follow through to, I guess, any means necessary.
Any and all means necessary, there's no doubt.
Yeah.
Because none of this is, anything that really happens and really matters in the world is never given to the public to debate. It's done at higher quarters, and we have no say in it whatsoever.
Yeah.
It's a done deal. These people are paid so much as well. They have their own indoctrination, which is simply reinforcement, constant reinforcement, that what they're involved in is a must-be.
Yeah.
They're told why it must be.
Sure, sure, exactly. And
they're true believers in it, too.
Absolutely, and they wouldn't be in that position if they thought otherwise. It's no big
deal. So in this world that's to come, no one will be allowed to live without a purpose to serve the new world state. Efficiency is to be the new rule. Total efficiency.
Yeah, that's the behave after the beehive model, I guess.
Yeah.
Amazing. You know, and the system seems to be, at least at this point, also be favoring, as you said, psychopaths that actually have no sense of, you know, feeling for, you know, your fellow man, so to speak.
They have none. They truly have none, and yet, like a good psychopath will really amaze you with their hospitality and how cordial they are.
Sure.
But when you listen to their opinions, that's when you're floored. Because they can say it in such a nice way, something which to them is just so practical.
Absolutely.
But to you, they're telling you of mass murder, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And as you say, maybe to be able to lay it out in a you know, coherent and you know, they're able to sound responsible in that sense, I guess found out that you know, to be friendly in that sense is something that serves the purpose better. So it's just a role that they adopt basically in order to further their agenda, or to be able to speak to other people who might, you know, so that other people might respect them also, I guess.
Oh, absolutely. Make no mistake. See, a psychopath has one other little thing. I mean, he has a tremendous ego.
Yeah.
And he loves applause. And little awards along the way in presentations, or even going over to Britain to get knighted.
Yeah, yeah, sure.
Or getting their countries in Canada, give them OBEs.
OBEs.
They just love to get these awards because it's a sign of their high worth.
So that's where the medals and the diplomas and all of that crap comes in, I guess.
Yes, the titles, yeah.
Yeah, the titles, exactly. And I guess that many of these also, in that regard, is kind of have a Masonic background in that sense, that there are, you know, that you even get your degree, of course, when you go out from school and stuff like that.
Oh, definitely, definitely. Plus, they have professors in all universities, have had since they started them up, in fact. Again, from the encyclopedist group, who belong to these agencies, this world religion, this elitist society, and they choose and pick people, students at school, for their tasks. The CIA, which is only part of it, recruits from university, because certain professors are on the lookout for certain personality types.
Yeah, exactly. It's perfect. It's a model set up for the self, you know, so that the system can self-sustain, you know, even if we have a few dropouts in personnel here or there or whatever. The system, I guess, it's set up in such a manner that it will, as I said, it's kind of sustain itself, basically.
Sure.
Huh.
And even with Africa had an overdosing on left-wing, right-wing politics, especially communism versus capitalism.
Mm, sure.
They had more of it than most people. The same guys were funding all sides to keep them in perpetual warfare.
Yeah.
And that killed millions off just by starvation. Most of the starvation in Africa over many years wasn't caused by poor weather or lack of anything. It was the lack of time and ability to get food planted and get it in because of the local wars that were going on.
I see. In regards to the tippy toe tactics towards a government that stretch worldwide, so to speak, I noticed that is happening on all other continents too, of course, but that there is a creation of the African Union. And do you think that they will kind of lead this in towards at least a first step towards a solution to the problem?
Well, it's already underway.
Yeah, it is.
It's already underway. Mandela was basically raised up to do this in the last 10 years or so.
Yeah.
I'm sure he knew it from the very beginning that eventually that was the function of it.
Oh, it's amazing. Yeah. Who knows where we might end up? In regards to AIDS and so forth. I guess that is the main genocide plan that they've got. I haven't read up on this too much at this stage yet. But I guess there is. Do you know this, Alan? Is this a tremendous problem still, or are they able to fight some of this off, or is this
no,
occurring?
It's tremendous, because what you'll find it's mainly in the youth.
Mm-hmm.
The youth have they have very little in Africa, but what the West ensures they get is, apart from the fashions and the hats on backwards and the same music, they give them the music and the machines to play them, and they ensure that certain drugs come in, but mainly alcohol. It's homemade even, and they have parties like outside their villages, etc. And then they do what they think the West is doing. They get occasional Western movie, and so the teenagers try to indulge in the same sexual type experiences as the West. And plummet, they become down with AIDS.
Yeah.
That's the biggest problem. When you're destroying a culture and all the old taboos that culture had that kept it functioning are gone, and that culture is lost and yet tries to emulate what they see as superior, they will emulate it to the full. And when you have an AIDS problem to boot injected into there, you now are guaranteed that AIDS is rampant. It's just terrible. Rampant through all the teenagers.
Yeah. In regards to the game plan, then, I guess, let's say that they're able to develop this fully in that regard, to have an African Union, and of course we have a European Union, and the American Union is full underway also, of course, and then we have an Asian Union. In regards to a time plan, do you have any kind of, you know, idea? In a sense, as you say, these are all already in place, but a more official way that they actually are going to...
Yeah, more official.
Yeah.
Anything between... I know that a lot of the laws that the UN are in projections, because they use 10, 20, and 30-year plans, even 50-year plans.
Yeah.
And you'll find that in their agendas, which they publish.
Hmm.
You'll find a lot of them end up around 2030 or so.
Oh, okay, yeah.
However, we know that the American content is to be officially, openly declared one by about 2010. the UN is to be officially declared world government by 12.
Ah, yeah.
And so Africa could either linger a little bit or it will come under. It's already technically under it anyway, because
sure.
the few African countries where the UN have heavily been involved in basically belong to the United Nations. That's why they're a bit more prosperous.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, absolutely, and then of course we have that we have been talking previously on this show about the possibility, very likely, of microchipping that population. Of course, now the most recent thing in regards to this was, I think, Verichip has put in RFID tags in people who suffer from diabetics, I think.
Yes, and that's a fact. However, I saw one of these public broadcasting programs a while back, well called programs, because the public broadcasting is just another way for the foundations to put in nature movies and stuff to brainwash us. And it was about a place in Africa. Now it was in the outskirts of the Bantu area. The Bantu were the real nomadic tribes who had their herds and traveled. Well, they were all rounded up, you know, by the United Nations. Now they're inside camps. Because
nice.
No one is to exist in the old way.
Sure, sure.
And I'm sure they'll still start dying off inside. However, before that, they were. This is what they were doing. And not just in that area, but I showed you. The United Nations was offering the males free sterilization, a vasectomy. And what you would get in return was a little... they didn't give you clothes. What they gave you was a little chain that went around your neck with a card. And you were given so many credits per month. And a white van would come around your area once a month. And you would in there and you put your card through the machine. And you could buy certain things that you wanted from that truck. That was your reward. Straight out of what basically Charles Galton Darwin suggested in his book, The Next Millennium. That people would give up their fertility for goods.
Yeah. Amazing. You know, again, I keep returning to this because of course it's a you know, dire situation and you know, desperation in regards to all this information is quickly at hand for, you know, for all of us who thinks and ponder upon these questions. But I mean, I again want to return to the fact that, I mean, what is it within the human spirit that these people are so afraid of? I mean, they're desperately trying to control us and everybody who are, you know, different in that sense. I mean, there must be kind of a, you know, the genuine life force within all of us that they're actually afraid of. What's your take on that?
They are afraid. They're afraid of those individuals. And they've mentioned this in a few different books. Sometimes it's a little camouflage, but what they basically say is that, and it's, they declared war when they set up the League of Nations, which transformed into the United Nations. They declared war on the individual. Now, it was so amazing to me to read all this stuff when I was small, because I knew that the wars already were funded and started by wealthy elite people. And here are the same books that were now promoted from the League of Nations and the United Nations, saying that they had to make war on individualism because the individual was a cause of all problems and discord throughout history. I thought, well, so that way they'd already changed perception and reality by a blanket statement. But what they were afraid of, because they knew that within every generation you do have some people who do not succumb to the tremendous indoctrination of brainwashing we've had, especially since national education, again promoted by Masonic groups, and they boast about that openly in their books. Now it's an international education association to get a standard worldview. Well, you see, those who won't conform to the mass opinion, which is the illusion, not the reality, it's a distorted reality. The one that's presented to you via television and so on. The ones who will not conform to that are dangerous to their plan, their agenda. They know that. And so they'd have to find ways of weeding them out at school. And of course, in the last 15 years, 10, 15 years, they've been giving children amazing psychological evaluations every year to do just that.
Yeah.
And the boys who are a bit, what they will call hyper, I would say it was the most intelligent guys.
Yeah, exactly.
Who ask the questions.
Yeah.
And become a problem for asking questions.
Yeah,
because
sure.
They ask questions based on logic, and what they're being taught is not logic. So the teachers get angry because they can't answer them. Well, they put on Prozac and various other drugs.
Absolutely, absolutely.
This is the real intent of that.
Yeah, and this is incredible. And at the same time, it seems to be that the in the higher ups, so to speak, it seems that the individual is very, you know, respected in that sense, because again the theme of the Promethean theme and even the Luciferian mythology is something that keeps popping up, I guess, in regards to the elite, and this is of course, you know, in regards to the mythology is in regards to a rebel that actually breaks free, who actually promotes individuality. So I mean, how the heck
amongst themselves, though? That's
exactly, yeah, that's the point, I guess, yeah.
And yet there's far more to their occult religion, which is found in every holy book, because their ancestors wrote every holy book. That's why you'll find the same esoteric understandings, if you understand them, within each one. You find that you'll always find the opposites in stories. The opposites are all part of becoming the perfect man.
Yeah.
And you'll find little stories with a male, his wife, sometimes his wife is his sister, and you'll also find another partner coming in. So there's always three, plus the fourth one is also what they call a Jethro, or the Ethiopian. And that's the unknown one that the god accepts, who has a form of magic. This is all taught in higher circles to these groups. They understand this.
That's interesting, because is there a connection in regards to Ethiopia in that sense here?
What it means really is the Ethiopian is a magician. That's what they meant by it. And so it's a form of a king who is also a father, who's also a husband, to the wife who is the mother of all. And so she's often referred to as both mother and sister, and wife. And so really the mother is in a form of the matrix. Everything comes through the matrix.
Yeah.
And so all life comes through the matrix. They say it's the stream that goes upstream. It's the waters that turn backwards. It's even in the New Testament where Jesus makes the waters of the Jordan turn north. It goes north against its flow. That's the arcane meaning of the source of godhood. And when you join the quaternity, as they call it, you're perfected and you go up and become one of the gods. This is all understood in all religions and a high esoteric level.
Interesting.
But that's just a small part of it, I've said.
Okay. Very interesting, yeah. You know, I just wanted to briefly return to a news item in regards to, the tracking and also, of course, the medication and so forth of young people. This was an article appearing in the Guardian a while back called "Is Your Baby Playing With Its Toes Yet? If Not, the Government Wants to Know Why." And basically this is... It says that babies will be assessed on their gurgling, babbling, and toe-playing abilities when they are 5 months old under a legally enforced national curriculum for children from birth to five, published by the government yesterday. And this is, they're going to have, you know, 69 government set, they call early learning goals, and, you know, recording them against, says here, against more than 500 development milestone as they go. And If a child, you know, don't, you know, develop according to the, you know, the regular scheme of things, they're going to, you know, make sure to track this and spot if anything is wrong with your child and so forth. Either, I guess, to take the child away from you or, you know, simply, you know, begin treatment of some kind of medication or something like this. But again, this is kind of, you know, presented as a again, of course, as a helping you know, that they're actually trying to help people and concern young parents and so forth. But it's amazing how it's presented in this way and how incredibly, you know, this is very radical in that sense, at least to me. I mean, this is incredible stuff, and it just goes by without comment, it seems.
Exactly. If there's no comment, you know it's part of their agenda.
Yeah.
And definitely, as under the eugenics program, they're now calling it World Bioethics Committees.
Mm.
It's the same group, though, same eugenic strategy.
Sure.
They want to know, because in the near future, in the world they're creating, they're going to decide who will be sterilized.
Mm.
And the earlier they do it, as far as they're concerned, the better.
Mm.
So all this will eventually lead to those whom they will state are, or under various tests, are not up to a certain par.
Hmm.
And therefore, they'll have to be sterilized as a part we measure to the next step, because they know the next 100 years.
Mm. Yeah, and it's going to be a totally dumbed down, but yet, I guess, super efficient, strong kind of clone type of being.
Yes, it will be.
A worker, a bee, basically, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Ah, amazing. Yes, yeah.
There's a good site to look into. He's one of the characters who's up there pushing eugenics.
Mm-hmm.
And people think he's a nice man. He's called John Glad, G-L-A-D.
Mm-hmm.
And he's made a little web. He's got a website out there. It's called whatwemaybe.org.
Ah, okay.
And on there, this is what he says in one paragraph. He said, evolutionary selection has been radically relaxed in the human species as a result of the development of civilization. Is that word civilization? They never define it, you see. Science in general and medicine in particular. While these advances have hugely benefited current populations, they've led to a significant degree released the species from the biological process which created it and maintains its viability. So he's complaining here that modern standards of living isn't killing enough people off. That's how he's worded it differently, but it's the same thing. Formerly, natural selection took place largely as a result of differential mortality.
Mm-hmm.
But now that most people survive well beyond their childbearing years, selection is determined largely by differential fertility. Aside from genetic illnesses, this new selection is also characterized by a negative correlation between fertility and intelligence. It's meaning it's mainly the lower classes who are having the children. The core of eugenic concern for over a century. So people should look into his blurb, because he speaks for all the big boys at the UN worldwide.
Interesting. And this was, what did you say, what we will be?
What we may be.
What we may be. Oh, okay. Yeah. I'm going to do a search for that and put up the link in regards to this show here. Yeah, but again, it seems to be like, you know, they're trying to you know, handle all natural processes of the earth and trying to, you know, emulate, or not emulate them, but they're trying to basically take over these processes and to be able to kind of you know, decide themselves. In that sense, I guess we go back to that, you know, old philosophical concept of actually being able to be a god, I guess.
They see themselves as gods, there's no doubt.
Yeah.
There's no doubt about that when they realize they have power over life and death. And they're also in a high, very old esoteric religion.
Yeah, yeah. And I got to just throw in this before we kind of wrap things up here today. But again, in regards to another documentary I saw, a lot of documentaries here, but that's the way it is, that was called Five Ways to Save the Earth. And this, of course, was in regards to scientists' different ideas to how we're going to combat the global warming agenda. And again, this was not in regards to, you know, that this is open for debate or anything like that. This was, you know, people are totally convinced that we have to go in with artificial means to actually change, do something in regards to either block out sunlight or stuff like this. But the tone of all of this, and in regards to the scientists who were speaking about this, it was, you know, that we actually have to through artificial means control the processes of Earth, either through, as I said, block out sunlight with the sending up mirrors into space or something like this. But again, I think it's just kind of resonates with the fact that they're trying to take over natural processes and begin to do this in a scientific way, I guess.
They are. It's already been done for a long time.
Yeah.
We're just not supposed to know about it. We're already run in the scientific way. We have been since the first inoculations, in fact.
Yeah. Okay, yeah, Alan, I think that will be a great place to kind of round things off today. But again, as always, I'd like you to tell us about your website, of course, and how we can, support your work in case, we have new listeners or people who haven't, tuned in for that long. So give us your website address and some of the material that you have on for us there.
Yes, look into cuttingthroughthematrix.com. There's also org and net.
Mm, yeah.
And you can check out a lot of stuff for free, and the few things I have for sale too, which go a little further, and there'll be more going up there pretty well every day.
Yeah. Hmm. Excellent. So again, Alan, until next time, thank you so much for coming on. And as always, it's always a pleasure to have you here. So we'll speak again soon, my friend.
Okie doke.
Thank you so much for tuning in to the show. Check out our free radio archive with programs going back almost a year. We also have a subscriber-based archive for all you guys out there who want even more. And at the same time, you'll help and support this radio program and the redicecreations.com website. Your support makes our program and website possible. Thanks to Fredrik Palmgren behind the controls. We will be back this Thursday with another program for you. Take good care, and we'll see each other online. In the meantime, this is Henrik Palmgren signing off.